I am Planta on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Elaine Carroll joins me now. She is the director of the 2017 Miscellaneous Productions presentation of Monsters. For over 17 years, Miscellaneous has been working with youth in the city to create a production that allows culturally and socially at-risk youth to create art for social change and personal transformation. I'll get Ms. Carroll, who is one of the founders of this organization and who will be directing this production, to tell us about the work they've been doing, the benefits for the youth, the multiple disciplines they're employing in the upcoming tour overseas following the production's performances the 6th and 7th of October at the Scotiabank Dance Center. Visit miscellaneousproductions.ca for information on tickets. I'll get Elaine to tell us about the themes explored in Monsters. Some are awfully timely as the cast explores monsters found through storytelling. As well, I'll ask her about the performers and their personal experiences with bullying. Elaine Carroll is the artistic director and co-founder of Miscellaneous Productions. She is an artist, writer, and solo performance artist with over 40 years of experience. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Elaine Carroll. Ms. Carroll, good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So I'll ask you about Miscellaneous in just a sec, but this current production, Monsters, it's loosely based on the Shelley's Frankenstein. And the way you're looking at it, tackling the anti-bullying aspect of it, anti-violence, anti-racism, I mean, it's awfully timely, isn't it?
Yes, it's very timely. And it's loosely based and not so loosely based. A lot of her most famous lines from the book are in the play. And we totally followed the structure of the book. However, we made a few changes. If anybody knows the book really well, I think they'll find the changes very interesting, and they do play up even more the bullying aspect of, you know, what she was writing about. I mean, she was writing about so many things. It's a book full of ideas, and we're honing in on a few of them. But yes, it's loosely and not so loosely based on Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. She was always in the forefront of our minds while we were making it. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I've never read it, but I mean, even if you look at it today, it's timeless, isn't it?
It's such a relevant book, you know. I think a lot of people don't realize that she wrote it. I think one of the things that really appeal to our young people is most of the cast is young women between the ages of 14 and 25 years old. We only have one young man in the cast, and when I told them that Mary Shelley was 18 when she published the book and that she started writing it when she was 16, they really fell in love with it, and they really fell in love with her story. Her own personal story is almost as interesting as the book, and you know, when you read her biography, what happened to her is not quite as unbelievable as the science fiction of Frankenstein, but it's pretty gothic, romantic, over the top. You know, it's she had an amazing, amazing life, and very tragic, but very interesting. And she was very much caught up with the, you know, Lord Byron, and she was married to Percy Shelley. And her father was a great anarchist and publisher and bookstore owner. And her mother was Mary Wollstonecraft. Mm. So her own history, her own story is almost as juicy as Frankenstein, you know?
Yeah, and so I guess these young people that you work with, I mean, they take from it
what's
relevant to their lives or relevant to the community and the world at large even, right?
Exactly, and most of them come from pretty challenging backgrounds. They're really nice kids, really nice young people, lovely, but the backgrounds they come from are quite challenged.
Yeah.
So, you know, none of them have had an easy time of it. These are not rich kids from the Tony West side. These are kids whose families are really struggling. And especially in a city like Vancouver, what we're finding is one of the biggest struggles is housing, of course, for these families. And a lot of their families, for instance, have split up but are still living together because they can't afford the housing. So that is placing tension on the young people in the family. So, yeah, it's not these are not young people who have had an easy time of it. So they bring all their experience into the play, and it becomes a real labor of love for them, and it's very much connected to what they understand. And they understand that the play is something bigger than them. You know, we've heard like Alexandra Cole, who plays the lead, Victoria Frankenstein, she talks about the play as being something bigger than who they are. So it's been really an amazing process. They're so over-the-top talented. It's unbelievable what they bring to rehearsal, yeah.
So just before we started chatting, you mentioned that this is the 18th year mm-hmm. that Miscellaneous has been up and running, and you've been part of that. You co-founded it, of course. Is the process as rewarding year after year as you've just sort of given us a view onto?
The process is very up and down because we spend a year trying to develop, or a year to 2 years trying to develop a work before we even audition. And, of course, the year in rehearsal, the times in the studio are always rewarding. The times in the studio with the young actors, and we're writing the play with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're involved in the writing of the play. It's a long-term process. We create and rehearse and train them for a full year, and it's like a theater boot camp. So that year is always rewarding. The year of development is getting harder and harder because funding is getting scarcer and scarcer. And right now we're going through something with the federal government where we found out that we've had a really hard time getting, you know, really any substantial funding from them, because we found out just recently that, in fact, the way the guidelines are set up for all federal funding programs for youth, that the youth have to either be mainstream kids or they have to be in the criminal justice system or in the sex trade to get funding.
Mm.
So we've fallen in between the cracks because these are not mainstream youth. And in this particular group, we have had kids going through criminal justice, and we have had kids who have been involved in sex trade, but not in this group.
Yeah.
So we've had a hell of a time getting funding and securing any funding from the feds. We have funding from everybody else. We have funding from the province. We have funding from the city. We have funding. 50% of the funding is from the private sector. But we, you know, it's Vancouver. We've maxed out. You know, there's only so many places you can go unless you have those Point Grey connections, and we don't. You know, to get funding, and you know, we haven't got an individual donor base like some of the other youth-serving groups, because we don't have those Point Grey, Shaughnessy, West Van connections. So, you know, we've looked for the last big bit of the funding to the feds, and we're on hold. You know,
yeah.
So it's been kind of crazy. We have some Canada Council funding, but it's not adequate.
Right.
We have some Department of Canadian Heritage funding, but it's good, but it's not great. You know, these productions are expensive.
Yeah, I'll bet.
They're huge. Like, we're producing a professional play.
Yeah.
The youth are not professionals, but they're on their way.
Yeah.
If only somebody would give them a chance, and we're their chance, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm continuing to try to get the money out of the feds.
As an artist, when you consider where the city is, and I mean, you mentioned a moment ago, you know, the challenges to housing and just how bloody expensive it is to live in the city, and then now mentioning more recently the challenges of running this company and securing the funding. What's kept you here?
What's kept me in Vancouver?
Yeah.
You know, really, I've been here 21 years, and I've never connected with this city. You know, I've never connected in any kind of, I have some friends here. I don't have time. I work literally, you know, 100-hour weeks to keep the organization going. But that's what's kept me here, is the organization. The organization has already, you know, enabled me to travel for it and to represent us in Europe and the United States and across Canada. So that's been a real plus. I do get to travel quite a bit. Yeah, it's a tough city. You know, I grew up in Montreal, and I started my professional career there as a kid actor, and then I went to Toronto when I was, I think, about 18 or 19 years old, and I was there for 16 years. And Vancouver I find to be a much tougher, more insular, more, you know, city, more difficult city to navigate through, especially the arts community here. I feel there are some individuals and some companies in the arts community here that have accepted us, but we come up against incredible obstacles here. We've seen our work appropriated in ways. We just had a young person come to one of our company members, one of our trusted company members, and tell her that she was involved in another youth project in which a company came into a community of at-risk youth for 2 weeks and encouraged them to disclose very personal information. There was no qualified counselor. We have a dance therapist who has got a master's degree on our staff. She's a resident dance therapist, and she's the therapist for the youth. They had nobody on their staff, and they left that project feeling abandoned. There was no follow-up. We do tons of follow-up with them. That's why I've got, you know, over the years, I've had 16 of our former youth workers professionals.
Yeah.
There's a ton of follow-up. We try to stay in touch with everybody as much as we can, even if they're living out of town. There's one young woman who was in our first two shows, and then composed music for us as a professional, and she's living in Montreal. I'm still in touch with her on a very regular basis.
Yeah.
And we're trying, she's now an expert in digital technology, and we're trying to set up a project with her. So, I mean, the other companies that are sort of saying, oh, yeah, we do the same, and they actually say to my face, oh, we do the same thing as you. And these are these quickie 2 week projects in which they abandon the community, and the community feels hurt. You know, that's not what we do.
Yeah.
Like, we stay in their lives as long as they want us there. You know, at a certain point, they say, you know, I'm okay. I'm an adult now. I'm in school. I'm on a scholarship. We have a large number of our young people have, our alumni, our graduates of the program, have gone on to really great things in their academic careers and in their professional lives. We have a lot of youth that have ended up being teachers. We have a few artists, and we even have a microbiologist who's working for the federal government. So we have had a lot of success with our young people, because when they come into the program, there's definitely risk factors that we recognize that we're constantly talking about, because we're using the art as a tool to enhance their self-esteem, to transform them, while also presenting a work of art for the public.
Yeah.
Which is part of the process, you know. The presenting the play is part of the process. Like, there's a year-long process. It's very involved. There's a lot of therapeutic aspects to it. We work with a guy named Eric D. Wong. He's a diversity consultant. We work with Dr. George Chen. He's a social psychologist, and he helps us evaluate the projects. We're very conscious of what we're doing with each individual young person, and we discuss them at length to try to find the best strategies. What can we do in the therapeutic model and in the art, in the making of the art, that will empower them? How can we ensure that they will leave the project empowered?
And so when you keep in touch with the alumni,
mm-hmm.
Two parts here, without miscellaneous, do you have a sense of how they would have turned out?
That's a question that's kind of impossible to answer, and something that we ask our social psychologist, and we're about to go meet with him again. Actually, I met with him a few months ago. We're about to go meet with him again. It's impossible, and I don't know if I want to go down that road.
Sure.
You know, and even think about, oh, what would happen if, because I also don't want to feel like artists, like a lot of community engaged artists are like, oh, I'm the shaman in the community, and I come in and transform the community. It's like, no, you're not. You're
right,
a facilitator.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like all this ego involved, and I like don't want to get into that. I just want to say, like, okay, we're one avenue, because there's others in the community who are trying to help these youth. You know, there are counselors in their schools. They might have a favorite teacher. There might be an informal mentor that they have in the acting community, or, you know, a volleyball coach, or somebody else out there who's also helping them. We're part of that equation.
Yeah,
we're not. You know, we definitely have had youth who've come to us and they have nobody else in the community, and then we start plugging them into other resources. sending them to a community kitchens project, sending them to an Indigenous elder. If they're not from this community and they've come into this community and they don't, they can't really connect, you know. So we try to connect them so that we're not the only ones there for them. You know, we're facilitators, we're collaborators with them. You know, it's up to them if they want to go through a change in their life to empower themselves to, you know, and some take us up on it during the program, and some the penny doesn't drop until the program's finished, and then I'll see them, you know, we keep in touch with them, but then I might see them 3-5 years later, and they're like, wow, I didn't really appreciate what you did for me at the time, but now I realize how much you guys helped me.
So the feedback you get from the alumni is good, though, right? I mean, they do tell you how much it's meant to them and what it's done for them, say.
Exactly. And we have, you know, I think on staff right now, we have 6 alumni who are active on staff right now. And then we have, like, an alumni who, Natasha Paco, she got a full scholarship to the Berklee College of Music, and now she finished her 4 years there, and she's been composing for us. So she's not a former youth and youth alumni who works with us regularly, but every couple of years she writes a new song for us.
Yeah.
And she has been coming in to work with Chin and Jetty, who's like the top hip hop producer in Western Canada and one of the top musicians in Western Canada in any genre. And he's an urban music guy. And you know, so we pair our young people with some of the best professionals that we can, and then that's one way of continuing to work with them. But if they live far away or if they can't work with us continually, there's other ways for us to keep in their lives and keep encouraging them and keep in touch.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. I think the long-term aspect is really important. I think it's something that when artists go into communities and start collaborating, the community-engaged artists, the senior and community-engaged artists, like the people, like the folks at Vancouver Moving Theatre, they get it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a lot of artists out there who don't, and it worries me because kids come back to me and say, hey, I went to another project, I went to another arts organization, collaborated with them, and my experience was just dreadful. Mm-hmm. And how come everybody can't be like you? And it's like, people have to care.
Yeah.
You know, you want to do this work, you have to care. And if you don't care, if you're just doing it because it's another, notch in your career belt, then you're doing the wrong thing, you know, because you can hurt people. So we try to empower them. We try to be of assistance in turning their lives around. I mean, maybe they would have done it without us.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, we're not goddesses. We're not the be-all, end-all. We're part of we're part of the mosaic that helps build the art piece for them and build their lives for them.
And when you encounter a group of young people year after year as part of a production,
mm-hmm.
Do they, because they're all different and
mm-hmm.
they have different interests and the sort, do they bring to the project what their interest, let's say someone is interested in hip-hop or someone is interested
yes.
in spoken word or dance or some multimedia thing.
Yes.
That's all part of it, isn't it?
Yes. For instance, in this group, we tried to do some gamelan with them. They didn't really take to it.
Mm.
They didn't, you know, and it was really disappointing for the musician who came in to collaborate with us, and it was really disappointing for us, but they just weren't, like, into it, you know? He would come in, he would just try everything to get them into it, and they just, this particular group, the last group loved gamelan. It was one of the best things they did in Haunted House. Like, gamelan was one of the most interesting parts of the show. But in this show, we tried to do gamelan with them. They just weren't into it, but we brought a circus trainer in, and they loved it.
Yeah.
So we dropped the percussion element of the show, and now we're doing circus. So definitely, we see what they like, what they're good at. We've had other shows where kids have never picked up a pair of drumsticks before. Somebody like Ganesh Anandan, who's an incredible world composer. He's based in Germany now. He's an amazing, amazing. He knows his world instruments like the back of his hand. He's a champion throat singer. He's originally from South India, and he lived in Canada for a while. Now he's in Germany. When he came in, there was a young woman in that particular group. This was during E-Race. She had never picked up a pair of drumsticks before. Well, he gave her a pair of drumsticks. He opened the world for her.
Mm.
You know, we had no idea she could drum. She had no idea. She had never done any music before. She had no clue, and she was like one of the best drummers probably the best drummer we've ever worked with. So, yeah, it depends what they're drawn to, what they're good at, you know, which professional they connect with. This particular young woman, Lindsay Snell, she really connected with Ganesh in a big way, you know. So we let it happen, you know. We definitely see where what we do say to them when they come in is you're going to be acting and you're going to be dancing. Even if you're not a good dancer, we'll find some character dancing for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had another young man who came into one of our shows. He hated dancing. He runs a ballroom dance studio in North Van now.
Really?
Yeah. He's like, I don't really want to dance. It's like, you have to dance. Like, just do your best. We'll give you character moves. Don't worry about it. He was pretty good. And then, you know, I kept in touch with him. And then he opened a ballroom dance studio. I thought it was, and he became a Latin specialist, you know. And it was like,
There's a great lesson here, Elaine, in terms of because you're a creative person, you're an artist.
Mm-hmm.
When you work with young people who are interested in the arts, who mm-hmm. haven't really done it yet, obviously you said earlier that you're their first chance.
Yeah.
They might have had
a course at high school.
Sure. Yeah. But trying things and then finding what you're good at or what you like. I mean, there's a great lesson there, not only for artists but for people in general, don't you think?
Absolutely. You never know what you're going to be drawn to or what you're going to be good at or what you're going to love. You never, especially when you're a teenager, like the world is a daunting place, and, you know, Vancouver's a really hard world to grow up in.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very difficult. It's a very unfriendly city. You know, a lot of our youth have experienced a lot of bullying in their schools. A lot of them have been very damaged by it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of them have found that the schools are not necessarily equipped to deal with the bullying, that the victim often gets blamed.
Yeah.
And then they come to us and they try something, and it's like, wow, I can do this. I didn't know I could do this. I didn't know I was good at this, you know, and it kind of opens the world to them. And then, you know, for regular folks, I mean, that's the thing about artists going into communities that aren't normally open to art. It does open your brain in ways that has never been opened before.
Mm.
You know, it taps into the side of your brain. You know, I hate using the word creativity because it's been so co-opted.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it taps into a side of your brain that's been dormant, that has been put to sleep, really, forced to sleep by your parents, your educators, society, and then you try something in the arts, and, you know, you hear about this with my friends who are doing work with elders, with
mm-hmm.
the elderly,
mm-hmm.
With seniors, you know, they didn't know they could drum, they didn't know they could sing, they didn't know they could compose music, and all of a sudden, you know, they're in their 80s and the world opens to them.
Yeah, and after the production, I guess in November, you all are traveling elsewhere. Where are you going?
There's just four of us, unfortunately. I tried to get money for all of us.
Yeah.
We're going first to Barcelona for a couple of days, and then we take a six-hour bus ride up the Catalonian Pyrenees to an artist center called Centro d'Art y Natura.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be collaborating with the two high schools in a community. We're going to be in Ferrera. There's a larger community in Sort that serves six Upper Pyrenees communities. So we're going to be doing a low to no tech version of our play Monsters with the youth from these two high schools in Sort. And we're going to be performing it at the end of November in Sort. They've already booked the theater for us. And so we're going to do basically a staged reading.
Yeah.
Because they only want to see us a couple of times a week. So it's going to be more process oriented, but we've got the script written. The caveat is that we must work in English.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty good, right? Yeah.
Yeah, good, because I only speak six words of Catalonian, so. Yeah, it's an amazing place. I've been there before. It's just, It's a magical. It's also a mountainous region. You know, it's similar to Whistler. It's as high as Whistler, the mountain that we're going to in the Pyrenees. And but the communities are European and very, very old, and their houses are carved out of the mountain, and they're, you know, some of them are as old as the 11th century. It's an amazing place. It's just, it will, you know, I've been there before, but I'm taking two of our interns, Sabera Hamid and Megan de Leon Solis, and one of our youth who's in Monsters, Tiffany Yang, and we're going up the mountain. Yeah. And we're going to go work with these high school students, and it's going to be much more process-oriented than what we're doing here. And because we don't have a lot of time, we're just going to do a stage reading.
Yeah, well, safe travels and break a leg with this production on the 6th and 7th.
Thank you very much.
It's been such a pleasure talking to you, and I wish you all the great success with not only this show, but your activities in the years ahead.
Are you going to be able to come see the show?
I'll try to, yeah, definitely.
When we get off the line, I'll invite you to the dress rehearsal.
Sure, great. Thanks, Elaine.
Okay, thanks.
Monsters is at the Scotiabank Dance Center's Ferris Family Studio Theater, 677 Davie, Friday the 6th and Saturday the 7th of October. Visit miscellaneousproductions.ca for tickets and information. Elaine Carroll joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.